From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a special tonight. Don't often do this, but we have one guest for the whole hour. You know award-winning journalist Rita Cosby. Her new book, Quiet Hero, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. I want you to check out the webpage at quiethero.org. And we're going to spend the hour with Rita talking about all the high-profile cases in the news. Hi, Rita.
Hi there. I'm so delighted to be with you guys.
It's nice to have you. You know, for the full hour, your time is precious, and it's precious to have you on the show. I spent some time rehearsing that part of it.
It sounded pretty good. And, you know, boy, is there a lot to talk about
these days.
There's so much in the news, and there are so many fascinating cases that are still sort of dangling out there, and one that has been resolved, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about him. He loves Elvis. He loves his hairbrush. The people seem to love him, but it's not shocking to see Blagojevich, I got to practice that name, convicted on one count, 23 have been hung. The prosecutor says he will retry them. I'm not sure if that's in the public's best interest, but let's talk about Rod Blagojevich.
And, you know, I'm probably one of the few people in the country and the world who was able to pronounce his name before all of this, because I actually went to Belgrade with Rod Blagojevich. It was in the 1990s.
Oh, wow.
And he is of Serb descent. And it was kind of interesting. You know, he's from that part of the world. And his family is, I should say. And when all the things were going on and there was the POWs that were missing in Belgrade, and then they had been taken into captivity by Milosevic and his folks, and there was this bargaining as to whether we can get these three American soldiers. Remember, there was three American military guys who we were trying to negotiate with. And they figured this peace mission, this religious peace mission, including Jesse Jackson and some others, should bring someone who is of Yugoslav descent in some form. And I think Rod Blagojevich might have been the only member of Congress, or one of the few, and he was the one who came along for this journey with me. So he was a sort of no-name congressman at this point. You know, no one really knew who he was. You know, all the focus was on Jesse Jackson and, of course, what was happening with the POWs. And then when this story broke, I went, oh my gosh, that's the guy that I was there with when the bombs were flying in Belgrade. And we were in the thick of it. You know, literally the bombs were flying. You know, it was during all the NATO bombing in Belgrade. And it was a pretty crazy time. But it's funny that this sort of, you know, no-name congressman at that point with this crazy name, who I learned how to pronounce many, many years ago, suddenly has become a huge spotlight in America.
Hey, Rita Cosby's here. We're talking about, a little bit of everything tonight, starting out with Mr. Blagojevich. Your old colleague, Shepard Smith, loves to talk about him, talks about Planet Blago, the public's...
Yeah, and I love these analogies by Shep. He's a great wordsmith.
It's funny to see it, but you know, to see the allegations, to hear some of the wiretapped audio that has been released, and now hearing that the jury hung on 23 of the counts, as complicated as the case is, will it make any sense to retry this guy? There's a chance he's going to go to jail. He's done as a politician. He'll probably end up on a reality show somewhere.
Well, that was my first thought, is that he definitely will be going out on the reality talk show circuit and everywhere else, as you can imagine. It's going to be interesting to see, because as you and I know, we've covered cases for quite some time, Dana, and obviously, you know, your listeners too, they're, you know, always watching the news and the cases, and there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes. I mean, for one, I was very surprised, because first of all, I was surprised that it took them 2 weeks. You know, if you look at what everybody was saying, they thought it was going to come back fairly quickly. They thought that maybe the prosecution hadn't presented its case. It did come back, as you point out, with just one guilty count out of 24 after all this time, and deadlocked on the other. And you do have to ask, are they going to go forward? But the reality is, too, is this particular prosecutor, as you can see, Patrick Fitzgerald, this was a huge defeat for him and a tremendous embarrassment. I mean, even the reporters who were right outside the court today said that his face, well, he was very stone-faced when he left, you know, in stark contrast to Rob Blagojevich, who got a big cheer from the crowd. They said he looked like a rock star. He was high-fiving and cheering and, you know, getting accolades from everybody and saying that, you know, look, I basically, that one count, you know, it's a nebulous charge, the one that I'm actually, you know, that they found me guilty of. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor. He came out and said right away that, first of all, they have a hearing. I think it's going to be next week. And he said, yes, I intend to go for another retrial. And, you know, he seems damned and determined. The one thing that you have to look at is, you know, A, of course, the judge and other folks may come back and say, you know what, this is really ridiculous to spend X amount of money, X amount of time, look at all the effort, look at all the finances, look at everything that you brought in and still it came to a deadlock. Is it worth it? Is this a good use of, you know, and he could try to advise him in a certain way or make some suggestions. He's certainly getting, I'm sure, also from behind the scenes from other people. But there's a lot of ego that's involved, too, and this was an extremely high-profile case. And the way that this turned out today was really a big butt-kicking for Patrick Fitzgerald. And the question is, does he want that to be the way it stays on the record, or does he want to really, really push the limit and try to go for another trial? He's certainly entitled to. You know, he can say, look, I feel like I need to go forward. They clearly, there were some who felt that he was guilty. Otherwise, these things would have been dropped. You know, it wouldn't have been deadlocked on these others. I'm going to go forward. Maybe I'm going to bring in other evidence. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You never know with these particular cases. But right now, he's going to have to at least say that he's going forward. Whether he ends up doing it or not down the road, we'll see. And then the other question is prison time. Mm-hmm. Because even though this is a big victory for Rob Blagojevich, he could have gotten 400 years. If you look at, I mean, they were throwing the book at this guy. In fact, remember, Patrick Fitzgerald was using the terminology, Dana, that this was sort of a political crime spree, if you will. That's what, you know, that he was stopping when he stopped Rob Blagojevich, is what he said. But now, he still is found, you know, guilty on this one count, and he could get up to 5 years in prison for lying to the feds. What will happen, what the jury will do, or what the judge will do in this particular case, you never really know. I mean, everything's always a wild card. I mean, it could turn out that he still does get some prison time. If it is, it's going to be fairly minimal, and especially he's breathing a huge sigh of relief tonight. I mean, you think about it, he woke up this morning, and he could have been facing 400 years in prison. Can you imagine, you know, just even the thought of spending double digits, and now he's looking at a maximum 5 years, obviously a lot less than that since it's only one count. Normally they don't do for the full amount, but it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. And I think as you point out, we are going to see so many turns and twists in this case. We're going to see Rob Blagojevich, I'm sure, doing lots of interviews, lots of pitching to reality shows, a lot of different things. And if it ends up that indeed he is getting prison time, he's going to, I'm sure he's going to be fighting here. Already said he's going to appeal this one count. So I think this is going to be dragged out, I think, for some time until somebody steps in and says, wait, this is not a good use of our time. This is not a good use of the system. Is there some sort of deal that could be worked out? And that's where it may end up at the end.
And no one expected the prosecutor to come out and say that he wouldn't retry this because it would be even a bigger defeat for him. But let's talk about Blagojevich a little bit and how the media covered this. And I've heard some in the media and some people use that term hero. I've used and I've seen, and it makes me sick to hear about this dopey flight attendant that went not so while ago, Slater, to be called a hero. Your book, Quiet Hero, your dad is a hero. The people that fought with him are heroes. That's the definition of a hero. Rod Blagojevich and this flight attendant Slater and those in the media that like to throw out that term hero, you know, men and women in uniform are heroes, not those two guys.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I agree. When you look at sort of the circus that's created around both of these guys, it is insane. You know, here you have a governor who's on trial for 24 counts, you know, many years possibly prison time, and he becomes this, you know, celeb, this incredible, you know, fixture which everyone's watching, everyone's fixated on, the crowds are cheering, you know, it's sort of like a rock star, you know, is sort of the analogy that people were saying. It was almost like a sports star or a rock star walked out of the court today and was cheering with everyone, and you saw how gleeful he was. And yet, what is there to be gleeful about that you got pulled in on all these counts And it's only in America, guys, that I feel like we've created these symbols of people. And like you brought up the other case as well with the flight attendant, too. Here's a guy who, you know, now we've heard from different passengers that were on board. You know, there at first it sounded like, you know, there was a lot of sympathy for this guy that, you know, God, a lot of these flight attendants take a lot of abuse and maybe this, you know, passenger got out of hand. And now we've heard from other people who were on the plane who were saying this guy was a jerk. And this guy was sort of seeking attention, and this guy was nasty. And you heard so many different opinions, and you can bet that if there's a trial with this guy's case, it's going to become another zoo, and there will be tons of media there and tons of people cheering, you know, saying, you know, good for him, and then there'll be other, you know, angry passengers who have been mad at it and had other nasty flight attendants will be on the other side. And it is somewhat sad, I think, very much, that, you know, you look at all the focus on these guys, and you talk about, again, in my particular book, mm-hmm. I have a book out called Quiet Hero, Secrets from My Father's Past. And what I have learned, especially from, you know, here I've spent so many years and years and years in the media, but the real heroes are not the ones who are begging to be in front of the camera or begging to get the attention. The real heroes are the ones who don't talk, who don't brag, who aren't seeking the limelight. And in the case of my father and his men, I mean, these are the guys who literally were willing to die for their country and die for a cause, as so many of our men and women in the uniform, you know, do that every day now. And those are the people who I think really are the ones that we should be lifting up as a society. I do think there's something wrong with our society, you know, that we're not giving, I think, as much attention as our military absolutely deserves. And our brave men and women who are out there every day, and yet, you know, yet the Blagojeviches and the flight attendants and these people are, you know, are on 24/7 on camera. I do think it says a very stilted level in society and in American society. And I think we in the media are guilty of it, you know, certainly by propping those up and propping some of the real quiet, silent heroes and not putting them in the forefront.
Yeah, for sure. Rita Cosby's here. And I don't often do this, but if you have a question or a comment for Rita, you can email that to me, Dana@scaredmonkeys.com. And in fact, I want to share something with you, Rita, if you don't mind. Our mutual friend Red sends this. It says, tell Rita she is one of the best in the business and that she is one of my all-time favorite media mavens.
Thank you, Red. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. And I love Scared Monkeys. And for everybody who's listening out there, you guys just do such great work. And you have time and time again just fought, I think, for so many folks out there. And you talk about heroes and people who have fought against very difficult odds. And I think of Beth Holloway and some of the great coverage that you guys did. And when I was on air, you know, every single day covering stories, you know, my heart just went out to Beth Holloway, and I know you guys did too, and you guys did extraordinary work helping her to get the word out, and to get, you know, to get the victim side out, and to get, you know, cops in many cases to pursue leads that I don't think that they were following. And I think it's so important, the resource that you guys do. And I think the role of the media and the role that Scared Monkeys can play, I think it is an incredible resource. And I hope everybody out there continues to listen to you guys, because you do fantastic, fantastic work. And I think talking about heroes, I think you guys are really great at propping those heroes up and a lot of those families who are trying to get resolution in their cases and need a voice and need places to turn to. And I think you guys are real heroes with that.
And some of the voices that I'm hearing tonight about having Rita Cosby on air is that they miss her on television and they hope to have her back real soon. And Red asked this question, and it's a good question. Is one of the first things that you did in media, he seems to remember, was the 2000 election night between George W. Bush and Al Gore. Was that one of the first things, the big stories that you covered?
Oh my gosh, you know what? I wish that I was that young. I'm a bit older, Red, and I did a lot of stories before that. That was definitely a big story. And of course, any time you cover, you know, a presidential election, and especially where the stakes were so high in that particular case, it's an amazing opportunity as a journalist to sort of see news as it's happening and experience it and be there at the Supreme Court and cover so many interesting cases. But I covered a lot of presidential, you know, races even before then. And also, you know, I started actually out in 1989. I was an intern for CBS Evening News, and I remember, you know, getting to meet Dan Rather back then and seeing how hard he was working, you know, behind the desk, and how much he loved chasing stories. And then I worked in local markets for a number of years, and then when I started at Fox News, it was 1995, And one of the first big stories that I covered for Fox News was the Susan Smith case.
Right.
And, in fact, I thought about it actually quite a bit today.
Sure.
Because of what happened recently, this horrible case that has happened actually in Orangeburg, South Carolina, not too far away from Union, where the Susan Smith case happened. And it's a case of a South Carolina mother who drowned, who's accused right now, and apparently, according to authorities, confessed to drowning her two kids. Very, very similar to the Susan Smith case, and then covered a lot of stories for Fox News, traveled all over the world, and did a lot of coverage, including, I think, all the Belgrade and all the Kosovo stuff. That all happened prior to that, too. But you know, covering politics is always fun. You know, I'm one of those people, I think, anybody who watches my coverage, I love stories that are developing and that are unfolding, and I'm not the type of person who likes to be sort of chained to a news desk. I like to be, I'm the first person when, you know, when the story breaks to say, send me on a plane, I'm ready to go. I don't care what the country is or where it is, I'm ready. You know, I love experiencing the stories, and I think it's important as journalists that we get out there in the field and, you know, we know what we're talking about, and I've talked to, you know, all the sides in the story. I think it makes you a better journalist and hopefully conveys the story better to our viewers and our listeners.
And, you know, there's a parallel now between when you started in network news to the cable news coverage. We see cable news' ratings. Let's look at Fox News, for example, Bill O'Reilly, for example, compared to the network news, which was the staple of everyone's news for many, many years. It's starting to change. People are more interested in cable news coverage now, Rita. Why do you think?
I think, you know, cable news is, you know, it's refreshing, it has spunk, it has attitude. I mean, I think if you look at, like, what Fox has done, you know, Roger Ailes, I think, is brilliant. And I think what he has done with Fox News is really incredible. He's transformed the landscape. And, like, you bring up the ratings of Bill O'Reilly, and Bill, you know, his show is a terrific show. And meanwhile, his show is, you know, it just continues to rise and continues to do terrific things. Where you're seeing all the other network shows, which also I think I have a lot of friends at other places, they do great work too. But I think people don't want to wait till, you know, 6:30 or, you know, to watch the evening news. I think people, you know, our world has become so immediate for one thing. And people have become such news junkies. I mean, it's funny. I'll go on a plane or you know, anytime I take a train or a plane or anywhere where I'm walking down the street, I'll have somebody grab me and go, Rita, did you hear the latest today? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? People are addicted to, I think, certain stories, and I think the news cycle, and I think we have gotten very used to, if we want to know about something, we just turn on the news and we can catch it on 24/7 on a Fox or a CNN or an MSNBC. And people don't want to wait till 6:30. And they also, a lot of times, if it's a story they're interested in, they want to see it full term. They want to be able to hear the story and then maybe get different perspectives of the story. Stories of, you know, angles that they agree with or maybe an angle they don't agree with. It's, you know, it's funny. I have people who, you know, who love O'Reilly, and then I have people who say, you know, I don't agree with him, but I watch him every day. I got to see what he has to say.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the epitome of great cable news, in the sense that people are always tuning in. It's become sort of must-see TV, you know, when you see his show and many of the other great shows out there on cable. And I think that people also, the world has become, I think, such an interesting place. And I think people want to have things that make them think and stories that make them think. And I think cable, because it has the opportunity and the luxury of time, it can flesh out different perspectives. And you know, so many times I'll watch a story and I'll see something and go, you know, oh, I'm so glad that I'm going to have another, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot to the average person, but to have another 5 or 10 minutes on television to be able to share the story is a dream. And when I've, you know, when I'm doing broadcast television, the stories have to be tight and they have to be short. And sometimes, you know, if somebody says a great comment, I have to think, oh gosh, I can only keep that comment to 5 or 10 seconds. How am I going to tell the story? And you feel like you've left the viewer often with so many unanswered questions and so many angles that you'd love to be able to provide to them. And I think cable news, believe me, doesn't matter how many hours you have in a day, often if it's a great story, you still want to have more time to tell the story. You never feel like you got enough if it's a really great story and there's angles breaking. But I feel that cable news has the luxury of having more time and having more opinion and more provocative angles that can get people thinking and get them to express their views and feel emotional, because I think there's an attachment often to many, many stories. I mean, why do we care about Blagojevich? Because you're wondering, okay, you know, is this a good use of our money? Or did he actually try to sell us sentence? You know, there's always these emotions with particular stories. The story today that we were talking about with this woman, this horrible case where, you know, now she's confessed to drowning her two kids. You know, my first thought, you know, wasn't as a journalist, but a lump in my throat. Oh, how can a mother do that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think cable news affords the opportunity to say what drives somebody. It allows you to take the next level to the story. Maybe unfortunately in broadcast, they've got to move on to the next story because they only have 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
On a typical nightly newscast.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's such, you know, important when it's an important story to be able to. I think it's, you know, I'm one of those news junkies, and, you know, I was on Fox News for 10 years, you know, I was on NBC for two, but I always flip around, and I'm known, you know, in my office having, you know, six or seven TV sets, sort of seeing what everybody's doing and ping-ponging around, because I like to see different layers to stories, and I like to see how one person tells it, and maybe another group tells it, or maybe a different guest shares a different perspective. You know, I am truly a news junkie through and through, and to get paid for it is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Rita Cosby's here. Rita, someone who you know and who is a regular guest on my program, Clint Van Zandt from the FBI, and I talked just last week about how all these young mothers or young people, and whether we're talking about Kyron Horman or Casey Anthony or Susan Smith going back all those years or all the other stories, and we see so many stories in the media about the young children losing their lives and the mothers accused of killing them. Let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about that tragedy, and let's start with Kyron Horman. This story has spun more circles than you can imagine. We're still hearing about it. We haven't found the young boy. Hopefully they'll find him. There's always that Elizabeth Smart angle where we hope that he'll be found, but every day that it goes on, there's the potential of a tragedy. You know, last week I caught you filling in for Nancy Grace and doing a lot about this Kyron Horman story. Why are we seeing so many stories like his?
You know, and I think sadly, part of it is, you know, and we talked even about this case of this woman today who drowned her two kids. You know, I don't think there's ever any excuse to commit a crime and to do something of that nature is just unconscionable. But part of the reason, according to the authorities, was that she lost her job, there's economy, there's stress, her mother was accusing her of not being a good parent. She sort of flipped, apparently took her two sons to a motel and got, you know, put her hand on top of them, suffocated them, and drowned them. She wanted to be free. She was dealing with stress. I think right now, unfortunately, I think there are so many people that are in financial disarray. Mm-hmm. They are desperate. They are having difficult times. I think anybody who does something like this, there's something clearly wrong with them to whatever degree. And in the Kyron Horman case, it's a very strange case. And I think why people, there's also an attachment to this particular story. I think, Dana, because, you know, you see this beautiful young child, and now we've seen his face on television so much, we all feel like we know him. And I know, you know, going back even to the Susan Smith case, when that happened many years ago, the woman who was convicted of drowning her kids, and you felt like you knew the two little boys. And I covered that story so many times, you know, as it was evolving. First she accused, you know, saying that she had been carjacked, you know.
Right.
And then it turned out that she did it. And hers was a dramatic case because it was a while where they were actually looking for this accused, you know, this alleged carjacker that she described, you know, to authorities. And you felt like you knew the little boys' faces and got to know them, and you're just holding out hope. And I think that that's the same sort of feeling here in Kyron Horman. And I'm glad you brought up the Elizabeth Smart case, because so many times, you know, we cover these stories and we know the reality, as Clint Van Zandt does, that after time goes by, the odds are more and more, you know, unlikely of them showing up and something, you know, and something positive having happened to them. In other words, they survived. And as time goes by, things get more desperate and people get more concerned, and certainly investigators and family and everybody hoping, you know, for sure that this poor little boy comes back. But the good news is I think Elizabeth Smart sort of changed the odds. You know, I remember when that whole case happened, I don't think, you know, I think maybe, you know, if you had gone to Vegas, the odds would have been, you know, 1 to, you know, 20 million that she was alive still.
Mm-hmm.
And when that story came through that, you know, that I think it was a detective or a deputy, rather, saw her walking down the street, I had tears in my eyes just as an American and as somebody just praying for this poor girl. And in the Kyron Horman case, I think that when you're seeing, you know, families and there's complicated issues within the families, as there are in this particular case, the mother and the father were not together anymore. There were obviously problems with the father and Terry Horman and his wife. Now we're finding out that, you know, that they believe that there probably was a friend in the car with her. And they're also looking into details of her activities and these questionable behaviors. And I think we're all just, you know, people want justice. And when you see a beautiful young child like that, people want resolution and people want justice. And people are just praying that he'll be another lucky case like Elizabeth Smart. And that at the end of the day, maybe something happened. Maybe he's being held somewhere. Maybe, you know, a friend of a friend has him. I pray that that is the case. And I also pray that whatever happens, that whoever may have been responsible for his disappearance, that justice comes.
Yeah, absolutely. Rita Cosby's here. You can check out the webpage for her new book, Quiet Hero, Secrets from My Father's Past, at quiethero.org. Just click on the link in the show notes. We're going to take a break here in about 3 minutes, Rita, but I want to get a quick comment from you. I've always used the term, the difference between mainstream media and what we do here on the program and what you did on your programs is something I'd like to call Main Street media. We actually give the guests a chance to speak longer than in 30-second sound bites and to get the real story out. But in some stories, is there too much coverage and are we missing other important ones?
You know, that's a great question, because I think, are we guilty sometimes of overplaying things? And you talk about sort of allowing, you know, endless time and endless banter for particular stories. And I do think that there are times, I mean, in the case of the flight attendant, for example, there probably were a lot of other bigger stories going on at the time. You know, you look at some of the floods that were happening in Pakistan and elsewhere, and some of these other countries. And some of those things got, you know, very slight coverage in a sense compared to the flight attendant. And you have to wonder, where are our values? And I think sometimes we do get caught up in sort of the celeb of the day and the crazy line of the day or the outrageous comment of the day. And I think at the expense of other stories that probably, you know, and obviously clearly are much more significant and much more important, and things where people lost their lives. And sometimes, you know, I think the other thing too, as Americans, and I understand that this is our country, this is what we focus on, but so many times there are so many things that happen that are, you know, such as the floods and such as other things that don't get necessarily the coverage because they happen so far away. You know, it's not necessarily in our backyard. I was so happy to see when the Haiti coverage happened, just the extreme right. coverage that we did on Haiti, and I think that it was called for because it was such a horrible, horrible catastrophe that happened in Haiti, and I was so happy that all the networks were covering it, you know, wall to wall and making it an important story as it was. But I think that that's not always the case, and I think sometimes we just get caught up in the moment and caught in, you know, and sometimes I think our lives are so complicated, we want something that's a little wacky and a little crazy, like this flight attendant. And if you look at the ratings, often those are the things that people are talking about. It's funny, you bring it up, and I've had so many people, I was walking down the street today here in New York, and I had someone stop me and say, hey, what do you think, what's going to happen with that flight attendant guy, Rita? What do you think's going to happen? You know, they're not necessarily talking about the election or other things. They are talking about the mosque in New York. I will tell you, they're talking about that, too.
Right.
But they are definitely talking about the flight attendant.
Yeah, absolutely. Rita Cosby's here. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and I'm going to ask Rita some questions about ethics in reporting. We're going to talk about stories like Drew Peterson, Casey Anthony, Joran van der Sloot, and others. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll take a quick 3-minute break, and we'll be right back with award-winning journalist Rita Cosby. Okay, we're back. We're spending the hour with Rita Cosby. You know her as an award-winning journalist and the author of the book Quiet Hero, Secrets from My Father's Past. Rita, I've said that I would ask you the question about ethics in media, and what I'm getting at by that is Drew Peterson, someone who I interviewed on the program here, I think, 3 times. Probably received the most hate mail I've ever received, except when I interviewed Joe Tacopina one time. But yet probably the most listened to show that or shows that I ever had. Drew Peterson, pompous ass, for lack of a better term, an alleged murderer. We'll see what happens when it comes to court. We all saw a story here a while back, now that the case is going to trial, about how his attorney, Joel Brodsky, accused Michael Bodden and Fox News of jazzing up the autopsy of Kathleen Savio, bringing in Joel Francis from Girls Gone Wild, all sorts of crazy stuff. And I brought up the question is, how far does a journalist, like in this case Greta Van Susteren or yourself or whoever, go to get that story? I thought it was great that Fox News could help the family pay for Michael Bodden to do another autopsy. Whether or not Steph Watts was paying attention or helping, I guess that will be decided by the jury. But is there an ethical question or an ethical flag that pops up in stories like that?
You know, and you bring up a good question. The one thing I will say, and I've known Dr. Michael Bodden actually for many years, so I can speak on a couple different layers on this. I mean, I can just say that I know Dr. Bodden is an amazing, amazing, extremely, you know, in my impression, ethical, fine forensic expert. And I, you know, from my experience covering and talking with him on so many cases through the years, I would be highly surprised if he did something that was inappropriate or, in his case, you know, anything that was out of bounds. I do think, you know, it's interesting. You know, often sort of the lines get blurred a little bit, but I do think as long as you are reporting on the facts and, you know, the facts and work your hardest and do the best of your ability in getting the story and I think in getting to the truth, that is what I think our job is as journalists. And I think that, you know, I think that some of the stuff I do believe is sort of smoke and mirrors and of course, you know, all sides are going to try to throw barbs and do whatever they can to sort of muddy the water. But I think if people were acting in the best interest of getting to the truth, no matter what the truth is, then that's the most important thing. And I think if you are working towards getting to whatever the end result is by getting in Dr. Bodden, you know, whichever the results would have shown in that case, if the results or something in that particular case would have been helpful to Peterson, you know, I do believe that, you know, the Fox News as an organization would have shown that too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can say also from speaking, you know, as working at Fox News for so many years, you know, I can't think of a time where they came to me and said, you know, don't report that story or tell it this particular way and don't tell it this particular way because it's going to be helpful or hurtful. And I do believe that, you know, as an organization, that Fox, if the information had come out and that would have looked positive or more positive, certainly for Drew Peterson, I think that Fox News as an organization would have put that out there. And I know Dr. Bodden certainly would have.
You know, and I've told you this before, a few years back I had an idea for a show where I'd bring on three attorneys and a DA, and I brought on Joe Tacopina, who was representing Joran Vandersloot, Mark Garagos, who was representing Scott Peterson, and Joel Brodsky, who was representing Drew Peterson, all at the same time, and I think I titled it The Lawyers You Love to Hate or whatever, and I had Robin Sachs on as the DA, and I got a lot of hate mail over that too. But it seems that when you have these defense attorneys and people who look at the system blame the defense attorneys, Jose Baez now is under a lot of hot water or a lot of heat from the public with Casey Anthony and,
yep,
and again Brodsky with Drew Peterson, and I could go on and on. Yet when we see the cable news shows, yourself included, you bring these guys on as pundits, as talking heads, if you'd like to use that term, and they do a great job. People are interested, but people are also love to hate these guys. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, they absolutely do. And it's so funny that you bring up these stories, too, because whenever you're also interviewing these people, you are sort of, you know, walking that fine line in terms of knowing that you're going to have people saying, why did you put this particular person on? I interviewed David Berkowitz.
Right.
And I remember, you know, it was funny. I remember even, you know, at the time, CNN actually, I remember, came out and made some comment like, you know, how could she interview him? And, of course, it turned out that CNN was trying to do the interview and couldn't get it. So it was more sour grapes than anything else. But all these people, when they're sort of thrust in the limelight, what journalist would not interview Drew Peterson?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people listening out there, especially the ones that are critical of you know, say you even, you know, interviewing Drew Peterson, have to realize that as a journalist, I mean, there are many times where we've done stories that all of a sudden, you know, enlighten something on the case and advance the case. And that's where I think a journalist can really do a terrific job, you know, something that, that either helps, you know, or points the finger more at somebody. Sometimes, you know, a person gets a little looser when they're talking to a journalist than if they're talking suddenly to the police department, you know, when a cop pulls them in and says, okay, well, you know, they're reading you your rights and then you're answering questions. It's a little different than after you've been sitting around for a little bit talking to the journalist. You're a little comfortable. You know, maybe you're caught up in the cameras. Maybe you're just, you know, not caught up in the cameras and you're just relaxed. Whatever the case is, I mean, there have been times where people said things on camera and they went, uh-oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said that, you know, or there are times where someone made a case and suddenly you went, wow, maybe this person is innocent. I didn't know that, and did authorities really focus on that? Or maybe authorities didn't even know that because they didn't ask that particular question. So it can go both ways, and I do think that, you know, a good journalist interviews no matter who the person is. And it's funny, I always tell everyone, you know, that when you see me, either you did something really good or really bad, because there's usually not in between. If you just kind of were an average person and there wasn't really anything unusual that happened in your life that day, it's not going to be news. You know, so the essence of news is interviewing someone who did something really extraordinary or did something that's, you know, that's somewhat questionable, or they're thrown in a very questionable situation. And I think that people have to realize that, that good journalists, you know, can really provide great services. I mean, there are so many times where we've done stories and, you know, or we've put out pleas and said, you know, please turn in this person, or if you see this person who's on the run, and often, you know, look at America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Look at the great work that they do by putting out stories and putting out, have you seen this person, and how many people have been caught because they happen to tune in, and, or, you know, a friend or somebody else or a stranger tunes in and then suddenly runs into that person on the street and calls authorities and said, I just ran into so-and-so. And I think that that's where TV, I think, can provide, you know, and journalists and the Internet and all these great resources that are out there provide a tremendous, tremendous service. And you know, I also think, you know, as a journalist, it's so fascinating to interview people like Drew Peterson. And in some of the cases, I mean, I've interviewed some very interesting people. I mean, you know, I brought up David Berkowitz. You know, I've spoken to Michael Jackson. You know, I've interviewed Yasser Arafat. You know, I've interviewed, you know, I've spoken to Slobodan Milosevic, you know, who's accused of war crimes, you know, incredible atrocities. And I think, you know, it's always fascinating. I would never say that these are, you know, especially in the case of, you know, of Milosevic, you don't describe that as a good person in any shape or form. But I like people who are somewhat conflicted. And, you know, and in the case of Michael Jackson, who is a tremendously talented man and obviously left us, I think, way too early. You know, I mean, I think he's still such a wonderfully talented man and, you know, as a performer and as a musician, and such a sad case in terms of what happened. And I think that I like to interview people at sort of turning points in their life or conflicted times. And sometimes the people on the other extreme, if you look at, you know, the Berkowitzes and the Arafats and those people, it's interesting to interview them at difficult times in their lives and difficult times in history, too, because, you know, you're experiencing history as it's happening. And people always have wanted to, whether they like these people or not. There are a lot of people who would love to sit down to Drew Peterson and ask these questions. Where were you? What happened here? What happened here? And I think it's a great luxury as a journalist to be able to sit down with people and be able to ask them anything, absolutely anything you want. And the camera will show often if a person is telling the truth or not. Sometimes just by seeing it in their eyes or the way they answer that question or dodge that particular question, often what they don't say is sometimes the most telling.
Exactly. You can show how much you do know by trying to show how much you don't know. Let's talk about, again, sticking with the integrity part of it, and as a host, and interviewing Joran van der Sloot, for example, Greta Van Susteren, who I love, spent many hours on hours, days, weeks, months on the Holloway story, as we all have, and by no means do I put myself into the category of you or her, but interviewing Joran van der Sloot, and I think where Greta may have made a mistake is when, and we all know how famous this comment was, is where she said on air, I tend to believe him. Well, I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget the shows that I did after, and Greta was under a firestorm for that. How neutral can you be or should you be as someone doing an interview with the Joran van der Sloot, Rita, and whether or not you tend to believe him or you don't, do you say that on air?
I mean, I think you have to be very careful what you say on air, clearly. And I think that, especially when you're dealing with people like that, I mean, I have, you know, I'll tell you a story. I remember it gave me a very powerful lesson of sort of seeing evil. I was over there in Yugoslavia. Again, this was the time I was there with Rob Blagojevich. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the world was looking for this man named Arkan, who they believe was responsible, sort of the Heimlich Himmler, if you will, of our modern day, who they believe was responsible for carrying out some of the horrible atrocities that were taking place in Yugoslavia. And they believe this was a man sort of ordering, you know, the murders and the rapes and these just horrible, horrible things. And you're just envisioning what this man would look like and what, you know, true evil, somebody who would be responsible for these things, what they'd look like. And I suddenly, someone points him out to me, and there he is. He's sitting there. He's a nice suit on, and you know, I think he was American educated. I remember he spoke very good English. And if you saw him, you would just think he was, you know, like an everyday, you know, well-to-do businessman. And when you see someone like that, and you hear all the incredible evidence against people like that, it certainly puts your life in perspective, and I think it puts our responsibility as a journalist, and it also makes you realize that, you know, someone could try to have, like, a very nice outside appearance, dressed well, could come across very courteous to you, and then on the other side could be accused and responsible of some horrible, horrible atrocities. And I think, you know, in the case of when you're interviewing a Joran van der Sloot, you know, and to Drew Peterson and these people who are accused, I mean, I think it's always important to always make sure that you remind people, depending where they are in the stage. You know, Drew Peterson, you know, before he was taken into custody, before all this stuff, you know, obviously it's important to say, okay, this person is either a suspect or is not a suspect, whatever the status of the investigation is. But on the other hand, normally, if authorities are zeroing in on somebody for something very, very horrible and very, very heinous, and in the case of Joran van der Sloot, I'll never forget. I had on my show, I remember on MSNBC, I had Chief Dompig, and I think he was the assistant chief of police, I believe, or the police chief down there in Aruba, one of the either the assistant or the full, you know, or the full time chief there. And I remember he said to me on the air, and I thought this was very strong. He said, "They're guilty as hell. I just have to prove it." And I remember that was a very strong statement. It's rare that you get someone in law enforcement who was still in that point, current duty, I believe, in law enforcement, I believe, still at that point, yeah, making that kind of a claim. And I think you have a responsibility that when you're in front of somebody who, when you have law enforcement making those kind of comments and other things, and certainly all fingers were pointed towards him, you know, the activities were very questionable, the stories that he was giving were very questionable. There was no doubt that there were lies, at a minimum at that point. And I think it is important that we don't, you know, that you can't coddle those kind of people. You can ask them questions. You don't have to sit and scream at them and shout at them. That's not a professional journalist, you know. But I do think that often asking the tough questions, and we need to step back and say at the end of the day, you know, this is the information, this is what authorities are saying, this is what this person's saying, you know, you at home decide, or this case, you know, this interview advanced it because he said this is what's different than that. I do think it's important to step back and not put any opinion in, especially when you're dealing with individuals like that, because it doesn't matter how convincing somebody can be or somebody can try to be in an interview. At the end of the day, I think the facts speak for themselves.
Rita Cosby's here. We're talking about all the high-profile cases in the news, and we're focusing on Joran van der Sloot right now. Van der Sloot, Peterson, two guys that love to manipulate the media, especially van der Sloot. Now with the Peruvian case, it's Thailand, girls missing, smuggling, human trafficking, whatever you want to call it, has been brought up. Joran van der Sloot, you keep hearing that term, narcissistic, sociopath, all that sort of stuff. It's come back to bite him a little bit. But I guess my question to you is, Rita, is allowing Joran to manipulate the media as he did, again, you can't turn down the interview with him. You try to ask him the questions. He's not going to come in and admit to things, although he did admit to what I believe is the truth in the undercover DeVries video. Where do you draw the line as a journalist when you have a van der Sloot or a Peterson who love to come on the air and, like you've said and explained very well, you try to get them to say something that maybe they wouldn't say to the police? Where is your role compared to, you're not a policeman, you are a journalist, but you're also trying to get some answers too?
Yeah, and it's an interesting line. I mean, I think sometimes, and again, I do think that there's sometimes a comfort level, or there's sometimes, you know, an attitude that they have towards the press that does sometimes give you the leg up. And again, our job, like as you said, our job is not to, you know, to play detective. You know, that is for the authorities to decide. But I do think that we can do a tremendous public service if we can advance the story somehow.
Right.
You know, if we can get somebody who has not talked and get them to finally open up. And as you point out, I think sometimes the more difficult interviews are the people like the Drew Petersons who have been doing a lot of interviews all over the place. So what do you ask him that's different? And how do you get a different answer out of somebody who's already done, you know, a number of interviews and you want to try to advance the story? I think, you know, one thing that's great in particular, you know, with you guys too, is the fact that you have the time. You have an hour. And that often, you know, a lot of times if I know that I have somebody who I really, really want to try to get something different out of, I will try to, you know, have a chance to talk with them. I'll try to also do tons of homework before I do an interview. I'm one of these people who people know that I'll go home with like this huge stack of documents and try to get something that's a little different and a little bit personal, or something that's an angle that, you know, that's not sort of the typical question, or asking it a different way. Sometimes it's interesting. Some people just tend to sort of ask the same question. So did you do it or did you do it? You know, and I think sometimes by saying, you know, I have a problem. This doesn't fit with this, and do you understand why people go, you know, or people call you this? What do you say to that? Sometimes something that will give them a little bit of a rise, where they'll get a little defensive and maybe phrasing the question just differently than everybody else has phrased it. You know, they're so used to answering it in a particular way, but sometimes giving a little turn to the question, or doing your homework and finding some detail out that no one's really asked them about that's maybe unusual. You know, even if it's something personal about their life that might say something about their character, not necessarily where they were that day, but something about their character. And often, you know, it's funny, too, because people, you know, again, I go back to, I think, you know, hearing the expression in someone's voice and doing the interview with Drew Petersons, you know, sometimes where the person pauses, or if they're laughing at a time where maybe they're not supposed to be laughing, you know, or making an expression or making a shock where it shouldn't necessarily be a shock. And sometimes I also think, you know, it's going back to, you know, sometimes it's just common sense. And a lot of detectives will also tell you, too, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to law enforcement. They said, yeah, we were watching. We were really glad they did that interview with you, Rita, because it enabled us to sort of look and see how they behaved and maybe how they act in front of the camera, or you asked a different question about personality. They said something different to us when they were, you know, when they were behind bars being questioned, or when they went through this particular grilling with us. And so it's quite funny. Sometimes law enforcement is somewhat sneaky and will enjoy the fact that somebody's out there, because it gives them more of an opportunity to trip up. So sometimes, even though we're sitting there saying, you know, this person's out there, what are they doing? They're making a mockery of the system. Often that could be their, you know, their worst enemy at the end of the day, by saying something and getting a little too chummy with the press, and realizing, I think at the end of the day, and I think all journalists have a responsibility to, no matter what it is, that you still have to play it straight. That, you know, you can certainly try to get an emotional answer out of somebody and ask it in a different way, as long as you're professional. And but often, you know, often interviews can elicit some enormous and fascinating responses. And I think at the end of the day, again, we can't get too close to the people we interview, and we can't get to, and often people who have been accused of horrible things look like people who are walking down the street. You know, if you look at some of these people, you know, Drew Petersons sort of looks like everybody else. You know, obviously now he's facing some very, very serious questions and some very serious cases behind bars. You look at a lot of these other people who look like everyday people, and I think it's important, no matter what, that you remind them at the end of the day, my job is a journalist, and I'm just reporting the facts wherever they go.
I can remember a couple of years ago taking a group of school kids to see Doc Chapman. He happened to come do a motivational speech in the city very close to me. And when he actually came back, because I'd had him on the show a few times, Rita, and came and spoke to the kids, him and Beth both. And the very first person that he mentioned was you. about how kind you were to him, how he and Beth could rely on you in a time where, if it was to try and help catch Luster, to when a dog himself was having problems with the Mexican government. We don't see that so much in media today. Everyone seems to have their own style. The big Irishman, Bill O'Reilly, Nancy Grace, Greta is doing more politics now than crime stories, Hannity, all that sort of stuff. How did you develop your style of interview? And because, like I say, most people think that you're fantastic, fair, even balanced. That fair and balanced, I'll steal that from Fox News for a second here, and I'll never forget Dog saying, oh yeah, you've had Rita on the show before, we love her. That was one of the first things that he said to me.
Oh, you're very kind. And, you know, and I'm a big believer, and I've always been fascinated. You know, I remember one time working in a local market, and there was a woman who was a co-anchor there, and she, I remember off air, was this sort of weeping willow, very quiet, you know, not a big personality off air, but then as soon as the lights came on, there was something like, you know, magical that happened to her, and she got on camera and really, you know, captivated people and was a real fireball on air. And but it was funny, sometimes when she was doing interviews or doing things other than sort of doing the show, she was a little awkward. And I always thought that's interesting how someone could be a different person. In my case, I think anyone who knows me, you know, what you see is what you get. And I've always tried to sort of, I think, be the same person that I am on air as I am off air. And I think, I always believe at the end of the day, people want to watch someone who really cares about what they're doing and really is dedicated to what they're doing. And I think most of the places that I've worked, people will say that I'm usually the first one there and I'm usually the last one to leave. And I love the digging and I love the stories and I love interesting people. And I think that I hope, shows in my interviews. I mean, I love when people say, you know, I feel like you're real, or I feel like, you know, you're passionate so much about your stories and you're fighting for, you know, for people and for causes. And in the case of, like, Dog and Beth, you know, to me, I'll never forget, I was so, you know, taken by them in the sense that they were so swept up in the system. And here he went down to do a good thing. He went down to get Luster. And in fact, you know, for people who had followed the story, he was on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he was on my show saying, I'm going to get this guy, you know, P-5-O-Fum, I'm going to go get him, and I'm going to track him down. And then he got a tip after my show from someone who said, I know where this guy Andrew Luster is. He's under a different name, Carreras, and he's in Puerto Vallarta, and I saw him a few nights ago. And it turned out to be a legitimate lead, and he went down there to do a really good thing. And having spent, obviously, a lot of time now with Dog and Beth, you know, he truly is after trying to do the right thing and trying to help and truly believe that this was just a horrible person who was accused. Remember, he was in absentia. He was tried in absentia.
Right.
And didn't show up for court and was on the run. And he truly believed that he was going after a very bad guy and wanted to get this guy off the streets because he believed that there would be more victims. And then he gets thrown in this, you know, crazy justice system and these crazy, you know, rules in Mexico where I think they were trying to, you know, make a spectacle out of it and use him as an example and use him as an extreme case. And that's another case where I do think the media can do some great things and to be able to shout out and say, hey, wait a minute, where is the justice? And I, you know, I was happy that there were, you know, other members of the media. But if people say that I was the one leading the pack, I'm thrilled for that because... Yeah. I think that that's where, you know, in journalism, that's where we can do some great work and to expose, you know, corruption and to, you know, expose, you know, injustices. And, you know, you tell me where is the right in this world if someone is going out there and trying to get a bad guy off the street that he's thrown in jail, you know, and that the other guy's sort of laughing there behind bars. There's something very, very wrong about this entire system. And I think that I was happy to see when he finally got released. And I think, you know, he and Beth are both doing, I think, great, great work and trying to make a difference. And when the media can show those kind of people in action who are trying to do the right thing, I think we're doing a good job.
Absolutely. Rita Cosby's here, and I'll never forget Dwayne spending time with those school kids. I took to see
him. You know, I love that you bring that out, too, because so many times people just see sort of what you see on camera, and I'm happy to hear that because I know he does so much great work behind the scenes. and really tries to make a difference. And talk about a role model. Here was a guy, you know, he was behind bars, you know, tied with this robbery case. He spent time, so he knows what it's like for these guys who may be heading to the slammer now.
Yep.
And I think sometimes his words to some of the, you know, the guys who he apprehends, I think, are so powerful and so much more meaning than anything the justice system does. I think hearing it from someone like him, like, you do not want to be here, straighten your life out now. you know, I know where you're headed. Sometimes that means more than anything else they hear.
Absolutely. Rita Cosby's here for another 2 minutes, and I would be remiss if I didn't share some of the email that I've received tonight. And if you're listening to the show on podcast, which it is available, if you send me something I think Rita needs to see, I will send it off to her. I'm getting some questions about some of your colleagues from the past, Rita, and I'll share a few of them with you, asking what you really think about Bill O'Reilly.
You know what? I love Bill O'Reilly. He is a great guy. You know, it's funny. People would always say to me, you know, is he this cantankerous guy, you know, in the hallways? And, you know, I would see him, you know, all the time at work. And I ran into him recently. In fact, I did an interview with him when my book came out. And he really has a wonderful side to him. He's a lovely man. I think he really does care about, you know, helping kids, helping causes, helping issues. And I think he's got a great heart. And I think he's also a very, very talented man on air. I really like Bill. And there's some, you know, there's some wonderful, wonderful qualities about him. And when I see his smirk and his smile, and it's funny, you know, in the hallways, he's not this big, you know, shouty, screaming guy. You know, when he gets on set, he's got a lot of force. But off air, he's also a real sweet, wonderful man. And when my mother passed away a few years ago, I'll never forget, I ran into him in the hallway, and he was one of the first people who came over to me and said, "How are you doing? How's everything?" And I think that says a lot about who he is as a person.
A great guy, and I know Wendy Murphy has shared with me many times Bill O'Reilly's generosity, especially when it comes to helping kids and victims of crime. One question asks about, and again, it brings up O'Reilly, so popular, about how you see the networks, in particular Fox News and MSNBC, hosts attacking each other. We never saw that much before, but now we see it with Olbermann and O'Reilly somewhat, the political, one slant to the right, one slant to the left. Personally, I get sick of it. I think that both of them can do better work than that, but it seems like the people are interested in it, and I'd like to get your comments.
Yeah, you know, I agree, too. I mean, I personally think the focus should be more on the news stories. There's enough to talk about, I think, with the news stories. Versus, you know, each other. But it is amazing because people will talk about it and people are always questioning it. And I know that, you know, I know that when Bill has done certain stories on MSNBC and MSNBC the reverse, it's funny, you know, people writing in, I've seen the emails at both places. People are clearly fascinated. And I think maybe they're curious to see sort of when they see people sort of fighting who they see that are sort of larger than life. Maybe again, it goes back to this fascination with people and where they put sometimes newscasters on that pedestal. Or on the opposite, if you will, in certain cases, too. But I do agree. I personally think that there's so much other things to talk about. I don't know how you have time to talk about each other.
We'll end up 1 minute left. And Rita, again, I really thank you for spending the whole hour with us here. And her book, Quiet Hero, Secrets from My Father's Past, is available at Amazon or go to quiethero.org. And the last question is, how's your dad?
Oh, thank you. My dad is doing great. You know, I will tell you that he has been so shocked about all of this stuff and a true quiet hero to the end, as we talk about all sort of all these other characters. My father, I think, is still so humbled by everything and by the attention and hopes that this story really is a tremendous tribute. And I think what has made him so proud is that it's highlighting, I think, to so many people who didn't know about the Polish resistance, just the guts of these people, and also highlighting, I think, of the great role that our U.S. military plays every day and how courageous, you know, our men and women are out there who are fighting on the front lines and what they go through personally and what their families go through. And I think it's really given people a personal look at that. And I'm very proud to be the messenger to honor our troops and to honor our families. And I think my dad is humbled by all of this, too, as well.
And the phrase on your webpage, freedom is not free. Rita Cosby, thank you. 1,000 thank yous. It's been great.
Oh, it's been a pleasure being with you and all your listeners, too. Thanks so much, Dana.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Bye-bye. That's Rita Cosby, award-winning journalist. Her book, Quiet Hero, You can order from Amazon. You can go to quiethero.org. And that's it. That's a special edition of the Dana Pretzer Show. I hope you enjoyed it. Podcast should be available sometime later tomorrow or tonight, whenever. And you can find podcasts of past shows, commentaries. Listen to the show live by going to scaredmonkeysradio.com, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.